Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
At 425, I see 10 wins for the Commanders this season. I'll explain my case to Danny and see if he's with or against me on that. Beltway Blitz comes your way right now. Speaking of the Commanders, we will discuss them with Pete Haley. We got the Nationals coming off of a series loss to Houston with Matt Weirich to cover as well. But let's get started on the ice with the Capitals, whose season came to an end on Friday night at Capital One Arena. Let's get to it. We start our blitz with Samantha Pella, the Washington Post. Samantha, what went wrong in this series? I mean, they're a couple inches away from going up 3-1. They lose that game in overtime. Then they lose a 3-0 lead. What got sideways?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I think it was a lot of mistakes, a lack of execution. And as Brian McClellan said yesterday, it was actually a lot of key mistakes from some of their top guys, which was really uncharacteristic for them. And when you look back at this series, I think everyone's going to look at that, you know, inches away possible empty netter goal from Garnet Hathaway there, possibly go up 3-1 in the series, like you said. And maybe if they win that game, we wouldn't be talking about them, you know, exiting in the first round and be on to the next in the second round.
Sam, this kind of has been the story here these last few years. It's you find out about the extent of some of the injuries, Ovi's shoulder, and of course, Tom Wilson hurt. That's super unfortunate, and you know he ends up missing the series. But what Nicholas Backstrom said about his hip maybe never being the same, I'm going, whoa, wait a minute here. I guess kind of big picture. You look at the key contributors. I know there were a couple of vets there on Florida, but for the most part, they're 25, 26. I remember when that's what the Caps were. They're now all in their 30s, and it wasn't as if TJ Oshie or some of these other vets were bad. It was just, it's an old roster right now, and I don't really know what the solution is.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Nicholas Backstrom, that was definitely a woe moment, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, he missed the first 2 months of the season, you know, rehabbing that nagging hip injury. He opted to not get surgery in last offseason, so he'd be ready in time for this season, theoretically. And now I think his future moving forward is just uncertain, and it's a weird situation to be in, I think, for everyone, because Nick, you know, he's such a strong player, he wants to be out there, but it's going to take a lot for him to come back. And so how do you kind of build around that and the question marks with that on top of, you know, the other older players with like a TJ Oshie and a John Carlson and Alex Ovechkin? So I think the Capitals are in a pretty weird position this offseason because they know they have to go out and they have to get a veteran goaltender. They have to add some younger pieces, but with some of their top older guys are maybe not 100% health-wise, I mean, what do you do? So I think that's the biggest question moving forward and how they plan to deal with all of these guys as their contracts kind of start to expire here in the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, so let's try to forecast how this could go. I mean, obviously, Ovi under contract through 25 isn't going anywhere. Backstrom, for better or worse, same thing. We paid him for the services already rendered and being a hero here for a long time. Unless they traded Kuznetsov, who bounced back and is coming off a great year, that frees up some money and some flexibility. I'm not really sure where they get the ability to mix and match. I mean, they need to move a big contract probably to even be able to create enough space to like reshape the team. And the guys that make the money are Carlson at $8 million, Oshie at almost $6 million, Backstrom at $9 million, Kuznetsov at $7 million. So like, where does that come from?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. But I think Lars Eller's name is probably should be in that mix. You know, I think Kuznetsov was a big name last season, but I really think he had a great bounce back year. He was consistent and never felt like at any point during the regular season that he dropped off. And I think that's exactly what the Capitals wanted to see. And I think he solidified a place here in Washington next year. And I think it's actually now tables turned to Lars Eller. Can they move him? Can they get assets back? How do you figure out that situation? And especially in goal, I mean, if you want to go out and get a veteran goalie, like Brian McClellan said, you're going to need some space. So I think it's going to be all about figuring out contracts, who should stay, who should go. And Really, really, we have to look at Carl Haglund as well, right? He has a pretty decent sized contract, and he's trying to come back from two eye surgeries here in the last couple of months, and he doesn't know if he's going to get basically his vision back ever 100%. His depth perception is still off. He's going to work on that. So there's just so many question marks and so many uncertainties that I think the Capitals are just going to have to focus on getting as enough players around the core as possible.
Sam, thank you as always. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Always appreciate it. A little baseball, please, Darius. Everybody, Matt Wyrick covers those Nationals. That's why he's on the Beltway Blitz to talk about the Nationals. Matt, I knew it would be a struggle. I knew there'd be some issues with this group, but I didn't expect them to be this rotten defensively. They're not making spectacular plays that first week, notwithstanding when they threw a runner out at home, it seemed like every other inning, but they're kicking the ball around, tied for the major league lead in errors. Is that a surprise to you?
I think it's definitely a surprise. I mean, this is a team that, even though they are rebuilding, they have a lot of veterans, particularly on the infield and on that left side, Michael Franco and Alcides Escobar are the two players leading the team in errors so far this year. Those are guys that you would have expected to be kind of carrying the load for them defensively and helping keep things go at an even pace. But so far, they've been a bit inconsistent, making some flashy plays at times, but certainly dragging down those numbers with the errors.
Speaking of dragging down numbers, Patrick Corbin's start yesterday kind of ruined what was some momentum. He was scoreless through four. Then in the fifth, sixth, and seventh, he gave up home runs, and it all kind of got out of whack after a miscue defensively hurt him. I still feel good about his progress, though. I thought he was really sharp early in the game. I was in the ballpark yesterday. His ERA is sub four over these last four starts. His batting average against is .225. I know the numbers don't look great, but I thought he was maybe better than the appearance ends up looking yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, if he had just exited after the sixth inning, he would have had a quality start. Six innings, three runs. He comes back out for the seventh and ultimately gives up the three-run blast that really put a damper on his afternoon. But, you know, like you said, overall, these last four starts working with Riley Adams, it's been productive for him, has a decent numbers over that time. And big thing, while he did give up three home runs yesterday, they're only the second, third, and fourth home runs he's allowed all season. So he's been able to keep the ball in the yard, which had been a problem for him both in 2020 and 2021.
Other than that, it's been going pretty great when it comes to the pitching staff. I mean, nobody's really dealing at this point. Josiah Gray, mostly good, but off kind of a recent mediocre start, you know, kind of by his standards. Look ahead here. What's this rotation going to look like in a couple of months, maybe kind of by the end of the season, maybe with some of the kids coming up, thinking of Cavalli's timeline, or maybe Cole Henry or somebody else? What's this rotation going to look like here in a couple of months, and does it include Steven Strasburg?
Yeah, I think the first players that we're going to see inserted back into this rotation are going to be Joe Ross and Steven Strasburg. They seem to be on parallel paths right now, headed back towards the rotation. Looking kind of like it's going to be around the first week of June that we might be seeing them, maybe even before the end of the month. Of course, this is Steven Strasburg we're talking about. You got to damper expectations accordingly in terms of him coming back. But, you know, overall, I think that both of them are progressing down in West Palm Beach, and the Nationals are going to have some decisions to make with guys like Aaron Sanchez and Yoan Adon, maybe being the two guys who might be odd men out. And then, of course, Cade Cavalli, their top pitching prospect, is someone I'd expect to probably see a little bit later on this season. He's had a bit of a slow start to this year. Did just have a nice little outing in his last start in Triple-A Rochester. And Cole Henry, as you mentioned, he's a guy who is still building up his arm. He had some injury issues last year, and the Nationals have been taking him along very slowly. So he has yet to make it past five innings so far this year. But I think that once he does work his way up to being able to go deep into a start, I think he is a candidate to make the major league rotation by the end of the season.
Yeah, they're treating him. I mean, kid gloves isn't even the right term, like baby gloves or newborn gloves. I mean, they just don't let the guy do anything because they're worried about his arm, it seems like. Hey, appreciate you. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
See you, man.
Well, there's Matt Wyrick, NBCSW, does a great job covering the Nats. Let's talk some football. Pete Haley, NBC Sports Washington. Pete, why don't the Commanders spend any money in free agency?
That is an amazing first question, and I'm not totally sure. I guess they're waiting for this post-draft, maybe mid-training camp market to unfold where they can maybe get another version of Charles Leno or Bobby McCain.
What if, like James Bradbury or Melvin Ingram was
someone
available
like that
for cheap?
Yeah.
Would they pounce on that, you think?
No, I don't think they really pounce on anything, Grant. I think they more like to amble, stroll over, but certainly no pouncing. But look, I understand this offseason has been very light on the additions front, and I'm not totally sure why. But if it somehow ends up with they can get one more sort of veteran and then lock up Terry McLaurin, I think that can be the great equalizer. That will make a lot of fans happy. But still, your gripe and your wondering of why Washington hasn't been more aggressive in, you know, making its team better and more deep and more competitive is certainly valid.
I think my annoyance is partially because with their schedule, they could actually be really good. Like, I think even if just by doing the nothing that they've done, basically, they should win 10 games. They upgraded at quarterback. They have the easiest schedule they've had in years in a down conference in a mediocre division. So I'm going to pick them probably to go 10-7 with their draft class and the limited moves that they've made. But inevitably, you lose guys. Injuries happen. They're going to be talking about, oh, well, you know, it's just not the same when we don't have this guy. And at some point, I'm going to have to remember to say, yeah, but you chose not to add any depth. You chose to do nothing. They have more money than they're acting like they have.
Yeah, and I think linebacker will be one spot where we especially start making those sort of assertions, and probably pretty early on, because right now they're talking themselves into Cole Holcomb in the middle, even though they recently were telling us that he's best on the outside. And unless they add a veteran that is still out there, like, I don't know, an Anthony Barr or an A.J. Klein, even those guys probably aren't difference makers. So linebacker, I think, will be the first place where, you know, week three, after they get torched by Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and Jalen Hurts, it'll be like, wait, they have this thing called the draft. They have this thing called free agency where they can get better. They didn't choose to do so. But in terms of injuries, I think they're banking on the Curtis Samuels, the Chase Youngs, Logan Thomases, et cetera, to be their sort of additions, even if they weren't necessarily brought in this offseason. They're going to treat them like, hey, these are new players because we haven't seen them in a while.
Is Chase Young going to be good this year?
These are very blunt questions, but very, very complicated and important ones. I think with all the obsession over Wentz, and rightly so, and sort of the watch about Curtis Samuel and is McLaurin going to get his deal done, that Chase's recovery and just his important 2022 is being overlooked. I really hope that this past year was humbling in a lot of ways, not just in terms of him getting hurt and having to miss football, even though that can certainly invigorate someone's career, but maybe just letting him sort of realize that those comments Ron was making about him trying to do too much is a necessary critique, and that he can learn to develop his repertoire of pass moves, but also not feel like he has to be the guy who gets three sacks a game, that he can let others play off of him, et cetera, so quarterbacks aren't just sliding by him and tackles aren't just engulfing him because he's doing the same thing over and over again. I think Chase Young is still going to be very good for this team. I'm not bailing on him in any way. I will bail if he has another mediocre season where he gets four or five sacks and seems relatively invisible. But let's not forget, in 2020 as a rookie, sure, he only had 7.5 sacks, but he also had a scoop and score for a touchdown. He also had a forced fumble of Joe Burrow on the goal line. He also had a big goal line stand in Pittsburgh. He affected the games in a lot of ways, and if his knee is good to go and he plays the majority of this year, I think he will continue to affect the game in a lot of ways. So I do think he'll be good, Danny, and probably really damn good.
Pete, I wanted to commend you. I thought you had a creative, cool idea for a story about a week ago where you wrote about the Commanders who would make the best commentators on NBC Sports Washington, with everybody talking about players making the transition to the booth. And you had some interesting names on that list. Tress Way, I totally get. He's hilarious. Terry McLaurin, I think he'd make the best commentator on the team. Taylor Heinicke, I didn't really get. Maybe you could help me there. He seems like he's a low-energy talker. Cornelius Lucas is one of my favorite interviews on the team. I get that. And then the only thing I know about Bobby McCain is he was mad at the media most of last year. So fill me in on that one as well.
Very kind of you to pass on some commendations to me for something I did. I always appreciate that. In terms of McCain, that outburst he had in Atlanta about how we are writing bad things about the secondary and that when they play well, we need to write about it, was certainly his most famous moment. But in other interviews, he was very honest. And I think honesty is something we seek out of commentators. And also, I think a defensive back's perspective is pretty cool to get. And there aren't many DBs or commentators. So, you know, as we obsess over quarterbacks, getting a safety's view on how to stop a quarterback would be cool. So I think McCain is an underrated but useful guy to talk to and knows a lot about football. And Heinicke, yes, low energy, but I think he's very approachable, and he could break down how quarterbacking works in a very regular man's manner and connect to the average fan. And I do think he is sort of understated, funny, self-deprecating, et cetera. Sort of like the way we think Jay Gruden would be phenomenal. I think Heinicke would be, you know, maybe not as good as Jay Gruden, but have the same appeal of knowing football, loving football, and being able to communicate it in a pretty straightforward way.
I like it.
Thank you, buddy. I always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See you later. Buddy.
Keep up the good work. There's Pete Haley, NBC Sports Washington. Grant and Danny with you on the fan. We got Ben Raby coming up at 5 in about 40 minutes to try to get the blueprint for the Caps offseason ahead. We'll discuss with him what's going to happen. But if you got a thought or a comment on the Caps and where they go from here, we haven't really taken calls on them today. We'll open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines for you now at 800-636-1067. Also next, I'm going to tell Danny why I see 10 wins for the Commanders. He made a little weird face when I said I thought they were going to win 10 games. So I'm going to explain my 10-win comment to him next here on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
G&D on the Fan, I will explain my, I don't think it's hot, but some might, room temperature take of Washington having a good shot at 10 wins to Danny in just a minute. One final opportunity, though, to talk Caps with you at 800-636-1067. Our coverage of the Caps playoff run brought to you by Paul Henry's Windows. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. We'll have Ben Raby on in a half hour to give us some thoughts on where they could go from here, because it's going to be a huge offseason for them. The state of the franchise is in flux now at this point. Hank's been waiting very patiently in Rockville. What's up, Hank? How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call. The topics today have been pretty incredible. Also, I want to give a quick shout-out to Ryan working behind the scenes in the show. You guys have a really good dude working the phones. So just wanted to give credit where it's due there.
He does a good job.
Yeah, no, he'd check in and be like, hey, we're going to get to you, man. Stick with us. And so anyway, I felt very seen. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there. But
love it.
So Yeah, so regarding the Caps, I got one quick thing and one medium thing. Honestly, I feel like they're strongly competitive as built going into next year. No personnel changes needed. Grant, you talked earlier about whether it was injuries to key people or some bad bounces, but they're competitive. They're in the mix. I just think during the season, I think they need to spread out the punishment so that people are healthy when the playoffs actually come around. And they were pretty much healthy this time, at least to start with. So, I mean, I guess they have been doing that well. The goalies are fine. They're pretty much as good as Holtby was, or at least close to it. So that's reasonable. They can win with that. The biggest thing, and Grant, you mentioned that there was a guy sitting next to you, I guess, at game six that wouldn't clap for the stick taps. And that just, like, that struck me a certain way. And I think that's an important topic because I think that guy kind of missed the point. You know, hopefully when you support a team, you can find enjoyment in more than whether or not there's a trophy at the end. And I think that sometimes gets forgotten in the emotion of everything. Like when Tom Wilson's knee is messed up and he has fans coming up to him and saying, "Hey, Tom, we need you. Like, my self-esteem is riding on the outcome of this contest. Like, we need you to play through this injury." And, you know, he felt like he had to apologize to the fans for not playing. And it's like, no, Tom, you gave everything you had. You know, you certainly don't need to feel sorry. You know, you're not Santa Claus. Speaking for myself as a fan, I like the Capitals as people. They're a team that I have no problem getting behind. I think all those guys are role models and they give maximum effort. And so I'm always happy to wear the jersey.
So I agree with a lot of what you just said. I mean, I think there are a couple different ways to go about your fandom. And I'm not saying any is right or wrong.
Yeah, it's your fandom.
But like in New York or in Philly or in Boston or in some of these sports towns where championships are expected, they would hear some of that and they would scoff at it or look down on it. I'm on board with most of it. Like, I don't necessarily aspire to have to necessarily, it's not championship or bust for my happiness as a fan, to your point. And the reason I say that is I've grown up my entire life rooting for teams that for the most part never had a shot. I mean, imagine if my only happiness, the only emotional return on my investment that I got was if my teams won titles. I would have the 18 Caps and the 19 Nats, and then otherwise just a lot of awful memories and times. But I get joy out of Ryan Kerrigan's sack total or Pierre Garçon's catch total or whether or not LeVar Arrington got to the quarterback or Chris Samuels at left tackle, like whatever it was through the years, because I knew my team was not going to be good. So I had players that I liked, just like in other sports. I'll do the same. This year, I went into the season knowing the Nationals were going to be terrible. I'm going to watch 155 games start to finish. I'm going to be at 30 games. If all I care about, the only thing I'm invested in is like whether they win or lose, I'm wasting my time. That doesn't make any sense. I actually tweeted after Soto hit a home run in the ninth inning and they lost on Thursday, something to the effect of, fans got what they came to see, Juan Soto just went deep. And I had a bunch of people that were like, yeah, except that they lost again, or like, speak for yourself. I came to watch them win. And my point was, then you shouldn't come.
Not a great chance of you seeing that. Right? I got some percentages over here.
Yeah, like, honestly, yeah. Join everyone else who's not going anymore. Their attendance is down 28%, second worst in Major League Baseball, because a lot of people came to see them win, and now they know that they're not going to, and so they're not going to come anymore. And that's compared to this time last year, or 19, rather. Not necessarily like when the getting's good at the playoffs or something. So it's actually early season, not out of school yet. Like, the numbers reflect it's down to this point in the year, almost a third of the people are showing up to games. And that's what they announce, which is not even how many butts are actually in seats. That's like paid tickets. So I guess my point, long-winded way of saying, I agree with a lot of that. This team has given me so much. I care about process versus result more than anything else. If you have a good process and you don't win, I can be okay with it. And the Caps and the Nats, by and large, for years and years and years have. I haven't liked the Wizards process. It's a lot harder for me to support, endorse, respect, like everything they're doing. I haven't liked the Commanders process more often than not through the years. They've never once in my entire life done it correctly. Owner hires GM, GM hires coach, coach picks quarterback. Like, that doesn't exist. It doesn't happen. And so for those reasons, I kind of view each team a little bit differently. But that's not to say that I'm completely, like, whether we win or lose, I'm just here for the fun of the chicken tender basket and cheering for a goal. It's not to that extent, so don't strawman me. At the same time, There is a happy medium. We're on a slider scale. Am I the guy screaming and cursing at the end of a game that people are applauding for the Caps after they've been eliminated? Or am I that guy? I'm closer to the guy that just called in on the scale. Pretty decidedly. But I think it's sport dependent. And for the Caps specifically, some of that, Danny, probably comes back to that I really do believe, like, you just can't control the outcome in hockey as much as you can in other sports.
Well, I think context has to matter an awful lot, too. And here's what I mean by that. Let's say this year the Commanders go 7-10. Oh, my God, disaster. Everyone will be really upset. Well, year one, they went 7-9, and that was a pleasant surprise. That
was
fun.
Everyone was thrilled.
Right? The context has to matter. The rhetoric is, we're good now. They're not doing anything this offseason because we feel good about ourselves. So, you know, the Wizards, who you mentioned, I think rightfully so. I have never seen them win 50 games in a season. The year they go all in and trade for Randy Foy and Mike Miller, they need to be held to a different standard than when they win the lottery and get John Wall. Right? I just want to see the kid. I want to see him go out and go behind the back and get some assists and dream about one future where they might be pretty good. When they trade away draft picks to try to, you know, make some noise in the Eastern Conference, and they don't, that's a different standard than, hey, we're going to go play the kids. The Nationals this year, the standard is not going to be wins and losses. The standard is who's going to be here with Juan Soto, presumably, in a couple years.
I've said this a few times. I'll say it again, and you can get a lot more of this on the Bust and Loose Baseball podcast that we started.
Oh, hello.
Where we go in-depth on the Nats. We've got a brand-new episode dropping tonight. Kevin Franzen, who's the new color commentator, is going to be part of our podcast, Episode 3, this evening. It'll be available sometime around 7:30 or 8. We're looking forward to having you guys go check it out. But specific to the Nats, Danny, my to-do list, my pecking order every single time I watch a game, I'm always going to care about watching Juan Soto. I don't know how many at-bats I have left. I don't know how many games I have left. That's number one. Number two is going to be the trade bait. Nelson Cruz, Josh Bell, those guys are likely being moved for prospects in the next couple of months. I want them playing the best baseball possible. I'd love to have Josh Bell here for the next 8 years. That's not going to happen, I don't think. He's represented by Scott Boras. And so when they trade those guys, I want to get the most back. So that means they play well. And then the other thing is the guys are going to be here, to your point, a few years from now. Josiah Gray's development, K-Bert Ruiz's development, Yoan Adone. Pretty much those three. There might be another guy or two in the mix, like an Eric Fetty, who could still be around. But those three guys above everyone else are what I care about. That's it. That's the list.
So as it pertains to the Capitals and then the Nationals, too, and we've had great conversations with a lot of really smart people, guys like Ryan Zimmerman, who are like, would you rather us not make the playoffs every year? Would you rather the Caps not make the postseason? And those are valid philosophical discussions. I guess my point is, it's A-OK with me, as a sports fan and someone that's fortunate enough to do this for a living, to say, hey, they've had this really talented core with the greatest goal scorer ever to live and this and that, and they've gone all in, and they got out of the second round one time. It's okay to say, hey, that's not great. It's okay to be frustrated by that. I guess that's the only – it's not pushback. It's just different ways of seeing the same prism.
I'm in on anything that passion leads to. Mm-hmm. In other words, that guy who calls in a moment ago, Hank, who I respect, he calls in with his take on the Caps, and he's wearing the sweater. Passionate fan, right? He's stick-tapping for them at the end of the year. If you're the angry guy who's screaming and cursing, you feel something. It's like when you go to couples counseling, and you're not arguing, you're not talking, and the person's like, I can't help you if you guys don't feel anything.
Right, if you don't want to fight anymore.
You want them fighting. You want them screaming at each other because they still feel something. I got no problem. If you're an angry Caps fan after they got eliminated, that's great. Come on over. Be part of the you're with me here. Because you care. You're invested. It's the people that watch the game and they kind of turn it off and like, oh, whatever. Like, okay, that doesn't help us much, right? So I'm not saying there's a bad way to go about this at all. The fact is, four straight years being eliminated in the first round is not okay. Not good enough when you're one of the best teams in the NHL in the regular season over those 4 years. If you are really, really good, you should have higher standards. They have had higher standards. They do have higher standards. You bring in LaViolette to get over the hump after Reardon couldn't do it, and he's had basically the same result. Reardon had the two first-round exits in a row. LaViolette has had two first-round exits in a row. So there's some tough questions they got to answer. Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, most fans, almost to a man or woman, wanted Ovi re-signed at a massive contract.
Yeah.
Wanted Backstrom re-signed at a massive contract. You can't have your cake and eat it too necessarily. When you sign Backstrom to the contract you sign him to, Ovi to the contract you sign him to, and luckily he hasn't aged yet. Eventually, you'd have to imagine he will.
At some point.
But Backstrom, who's a mortal human being, has started to. When you re-up with Oshie, we all wanted that for X number of years. When you re-up with John Carlson, who's got all that wear and tear, like all the stuff that they've done to keep the core together, every time that's happened, maybe not 100% of the fan base, but I'd say 90-plus percent of the fan base is in on all those things.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, you pay the piper. Those
and the
guys
Piper's
are getting
paid.
Older and older and older, and people say, well, you got to get younger. You got to add this. You got to add that. Those contracts make it hard. So Brian McClellan is trying to thread a needle here that may not exist.
Well, even beyond that, let's say they're not. Let's say the compete for Stanley Cups portion of this program may be over.
Which, for the record, I don't think so.
Right. I'm just saying hypothetical. Let's say that it is.
I think you easily could have won this series. A couple things go different. You're on to Tampa, and who knows what happens.
Right. I'm not even debating. I'm just saying, let's say for the sake of argument that it is. Okay. You can't just start young now. The thing that Ovi's chasing is bigger than anything else. I mean, the cup is amazing. Obviously, that's incredible. He's going after a record that was pretty much unbreakable. This is one of those hallowed ones in sports that, especially the way this league is going in terms of scoring and how difficult it is and whatever, the fact that he's now within shouting distance, basically 2.5 excellent seasons of surpassing Wayne Gretzky, you can't do let's try out some 20-year-olds and see what happens. You've got to give him the opportunity to get 50. You've got to be to play in competitive type games, and you can't just, defenses will load up on him if you don't have other options.
Well, there's also a debate to be had, though, as to is the record more important than another Stanley Cup? Because in sports, I don't know that many examples of a team organizationally just saying, the number one priority is this guy getting a record, not us winning. Now, I don't think you're choosing between the two.
They won't say that.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, it certainly matters a lot, I think.
It definitely matters a lot, but it shouldn't matter more than trying to win a championship. Mm-hmm. And I disagree with your notion that it's an A versus a B, or that, like, Ovi getting his record and trying to win a title aren't – you don't do those things at the same time.
You want good players, and that leads
exactly.
to both. Yeah.
The more goals he's scoring, the more you're winning, the better you have a chance.
I guess my
to
point
win
is
title.
There's no rebuild coming. Like, I just don't think that's happening.
But how could it happen with the contracts that they've got? That's kind of my point.
Yeah, meaning you just take 10 cents on the dollar just to be free of the contract to start over and be bad. And my point is that's not going to be an option because Ovi's chasing down that record.
Yeah, and I think it has nothing to do with the record, and it has to do with why would you do that? Like, the contracts are Oshie, still a good hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Kuznetsov, still a good hockey player. Ovi, still a good hockey player. There's one high-priced guy on the team. I mean, Carlson didn't have a good series. I think he's still a pretty good defenseman. You look at his point totals compared to the rest of the league. But there's one guy on the team who's paid massive money who didn't necessarily play at the level of his contract this year, in my opinion, and that's Backstrom. The rest of the guys that make all the money, the Wilsons,
are helpful players.
They're
yeah.
really, really good. So you could trade them if you want to and get something for them, these veterans. You want to trade TJ Oshie, who just scored 6 goals in 6 playoff games? Is he the problem? That helps you next year in the playoffs, that Oshie's out and you got younger? I don't know, man. We can get into this with Ben Raby coming up at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny. I'll tell Danny about my 10-win prediction next on The Fan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ben Raby, top of the hour. He'll give us some thoughts on what the Caps can do. I looked it up, by the way. very few unrestricted free agents for the Capitals start of this offseason.
Pretty locked in to everybody they got.
They got 1 year left on Hagelin, Sherry, Eller, Hathaway, Orlov, Jensen, Van Riemsdyk. All those guys are UFAs next year. This year, you're basically looking at a bunch of dudes that are under contract. So if they make moves, it's going to be moving those contracts. Guys like Eller makes $3.5 million. I think one of the easy decisions would be Hagelin, who they replaced with Larson, $2.75 million. He wants to keep playing. He said he's not sure if he'll ever get his full 100% eyesight back, but we can ask Raby about that at the top of the hour. So here's my thought on Washington winning 10 games, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thought I've had for a couple months. You know, I've kind of been workshopping this behind the scenes, but when they play the teams is not as important as who they're playing to me. Their schedule is so easy. It won't be this easy again for many years. The division is not any good. The Giants have a first-year head coach in Daboll. Maybe they'll surprise, but they're at best, they'll be mediocre. The Cowboys are the front runners. They've gotten worse since the end of last season. Unequivocally. The Eagles have a chance to win the division. You know me, I don't trust Jalen Hurts.
I know.
I think he's a jag. So in your division, you got Prescott, who I think is really good, coming off of a down year. Has not been the same since he got hurt. You've got Hurts, who is a jag. You've got Daniel Jones, who's not shown anything at this point to make you think he is a middle-of-the-pack starter even, let alone a back-end starter in the league. You could make the case that you got the second-best quarterback in the division in Carson Wentz. You got better at the most important position. You play a really soft schedule. And I'm going hard with the fact that the conference is bad. I think there's wild-card possibilities for them, even if they don't win the division. So I see 10-7. I'd love to feel better about it if they actually upgraded corner and linebacker and were aggressive in free agency, but they've decided to go the route of not doing that. But you added a wide receiver who's going to play in Dotson. You brought in a safety you think is going to be really good in Butler. You should get something out of Fidarian Mathis at defensive tackle, where you lost two key guys, including Ioannidis, who played over half the snaps. So I'm seeing 10-7 when I look at this thing.
It's not a crazy on-paper take. It's not. Because of everything that you mentioned, the schedule, not talking about the good teams, the Green Bays of the world, but everybody else, there's plenty of teams that finished last year very bad. My arguments against her are as follows. They have not had a season where they started off good, played good, and finished good in 30 years. Hasn't happened. Has not happened, despite easy schedule.
Say that again, because what do you mean? Just like where they're 3-0, then 6-2, then 11-5.
They win two out of every three games. Right. Just to, you know, like end up 10-6, and now you can't do that. But you know what I mean? Just
yeah, they're always 0-4, and they have to go on a 4-game run at the end, or vice versa.
Yeah, since 1999, that was the last time they started off pretty good, and the team that ended the season was pretty good. Just a normal NFL football season. Now, some people might argue there is no such thing, but sometimes the cream rises to the top. So that's my number one contention is they just, and I know Ron Rivera hates talking about the past, and that's adorable. But I was here before you, and I'll be here after you. They don't do that. They don't do a thing despite other years where they've had easy schedules, at least on paper. Number two, the things that we think right now get turned on their head every single year. That's the nature of this sport. That's why half the teams that make the postseason don't make it the following year, and there's always teams that go from worst to first, etc. Right now, we're still dealing with our impressions of teams from last year. Right now, we think Tennessee is a winnable game because Ryan Tannehill was bad that time. Well, they pretty consistently win double-digit games and have been consistently better than teams like Washington. I would also add that that's the best-case scenario, right, what you're talking about. And I think that's the vision that they've got, why they are kind of sitting on their hands here. We upgraded a quarterback. This is them talking now. Our schedule's pretty easy. We can win 10 games. That's what they're looking at. But that's when things go according to plan. It's pro sports.
I kind of think it's realistic, though.
It is, if things go right.
But I'm just saying, best case scenario is better than that. Like, to me, the most realistic thing, I guess, because we're talking about a team that almost never wins, mm-hmm. It might be 9-8 or 8-9. Maybe 10-7 is bullish, because 10 ties the highest win total they've had in
any point. Three times in 30 years.
Since the early 90s. But you now play 17.
Yep.
And I have made this case. I said it on Friday. You were out, but I said, I've got them at 10-7, but if this was a 16-game season, it's probably like a 9. It's 9.
Uh-huh.
Hold on. Sneeze coming.
Here it comes.
Whoa. Excuse me.
That almost never happens, by the way.
Something was afoot.
Mid-sentence.
Yeah.
Usually it's like when you're about to talk or you're listening or something gets in there. You were like in the middle of talking.
I was just a lot of talking.
Yeah.
9-7.
9-7.
That's what I would say in a 16er, but this is a 17er.
Mm-hmm.
First time they've ever had 9 games at home.
Yep.
And
that home field advantage.
Exactly. But you're playing
yes.
Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta, Houston,
mm-hmm.
Jacksonville, Chicago.
Yep.
You can't ask for a bigger group of the dregs of the NFL. There was a tiering done analytically by, I think it was PFF, where they put together like 5 tiers. It was actually, you know who it was? It was Computer Cowboy, Ben Baldwin.
Yeah, Ben Baldwin.
So he's like a numbers guy. But he put together 5 tiers of teams based on already like the odds for all their games next year,
mm-hmm.
what the odds makers think of them. And there were a total of 9 teams in the bottom 2 tiers that were like, thanks for trying, worst in the league, and then this team's going to be awful.
Uh-huh.
Washington played 7 games against those teams, 2 against the Giants and then the 5 teams I just named.
Yeah.
You just can't ask for better than that. I'm sorry.
It's the greatest setup a team entering a third season under a head coach that has been pounding the desk for culture change and letting you know how different everything is and don't touch us on our past. This is the ultimate setup, right? It's basically saying you still got to knock over the 10 pins in bowling, but you get to do it from half the distance. Right? I mean, this is the dream scenario where the cycle works out that you got the 9th home game, kind of as you alluded to. You've got the, you know, whatever it is, the third place schedule, and it just so happens that some of the teams on your schedule got worse, and then you're playing the AFC North when 2 of the teams are garbage. I mean, you add it all up, and it's the best on paper scenario that this organization has had in some time. So to me, if they don't win 10 games, something dramatic went wrong.
Let's talk to Ben Raby next about where the Caps go from here. We can get back into this next hour. We're taking you up to about 6:15, early pregame for the Nats because the Marlins have one of the weirdest start times in all of baseball. You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.